Hello, this is Stephen Hines, author of Zombie Fabulous, Rebirth Defect, and Valedictorian USA. And you, my friends, are listening to the PVD cast with John Orlando. Soak it up, suckers.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to another installment of the PVD cast. I'm your host, John Orlando, and welcome to episode number 125. Before I start talking a little bit about what you can expect to hear on this episode, I'd like to take a quick second to thank Mr. Stephen Hines for that wonderful introduction. As you heard, Stephen's got a lot of different projects happening, and you can check them out simply by going to his website, stephenhines.org. And let me spell that out for you. It's stephenhines.org. And if you didn't catch that because I was going too fast, simply just go to pvdcast.com. Under the links tab, there will be a link, if you will, to take you right on over to Steven's webpage so you can check out all of the great projects he's working on. So thank you, Steven. And with that being said, it's time to talk a little bit about this episode. I sit down with Mr. David Gwynn. Now, David Gwynn's name might sound familiar to you avid listeners of the PVD cast. He is the co-writer of Dark Iris, which, as you know, about five episodes ago, Derek Taleeb and Jose Byers came on. And in fact, even I think a week or so after that, Rebecca Hart Franklin was on this podcast to talk about that great independent movie. Well, David Gwynn is the co-writer and a producer of that film. And I sat down with him to talk a little bit about the craft of writing. He's writing a couple different television projects, and of course he co-wrote the Dark Iris, so he knows what he's talking about. I will state this, though. If you have yet to see the most recent Godzilla film, which I think came out about 3 years ago, starring Bryan Cranston, we're going to ruin that movie, so I'll just let you know that. Also, too, we probably will ruin Training Day if you haven't seen that movie, which, first of all, if you haven't seen Training Day, what the hell is your problem, man? You need to go out and rent that son of a gun. It's a great movie. Dare I say, a classic of American cinema. Run out and rent it right now. In fact, I think my good friends at Video Central have a copy. Run over and grab it. Anyways, before I throw it to my usual quick break, I'd like to talk about a couple of events coming up that are near and dear to my heart. Of course, my good friends at Ohio Championship Wrestling have a big event happening here on August 12th. At the OCW Arena up in Akron, Ohio. It's OCW Clockwork Orange. And, of course, the OCW Arena is at 2910 South Main Street. You definitely, if you want to go, check out ocwrestling.net. And let me tell you right now, the OCW Arena is a really nice venue. I visited the venue about a month or so ago, and it's a really nice arena. So definitely check out the guys on OCW. Or, if you wait a little bit, August 26th, at the same venue, you can check out the ladies of OCW. That's right, the big women's title tournament will be happening on the 26th of August at the same place, the OCW Arena in Akron. Again, ocwrestling.net is where you can get all the information there. And, of course, my good friends of Old Wrestling is back with their fifth annual extravaganza. That's happening August 27th at the Huron County Fairgrounds. 2:30 p.m. is the bell time. And, of course, if you want any information about this show, and it's a great show. I've talked about it many times on this podcast, how much I love Old Wrestling. Simply go to oldwrestling.com. That's O-L-D-E wrestling.com to get all the details. All right, with that being said, I'm going to throw it to a quick break. And on the other side of this break, I'll be back to talk to Mr. David Gwynn.
All
All right, welcome, ladies and gentlemen. I'm sitting down here with David Gwynn. David, how are you doing this afternoon?
I'm doing great.
It's good. Now, David, you are the man behind Ghost Entertainment.
Yes, I am. No, one man.
One man. And you also, of course, were the co-writer and the producer of Dark Iris.
That's correct.
So let's talk a little bit about the updates to Dark Iris, if you don't mind. I know off air we talked about it. Derek and Jose were working hard to try to get it distributed out through streaming services and anything. Any updates on that front?
We did get, as they probably alluded to, we got screened at Cannes Film Festival.
Mm-hmm.
Or Can, I don't know how you pronounce it.
I think it's Cannes. Yeah, I think so, yeah.
One of those pronounced. We do have quite a few countries interested in buying the rights to distribute. Unfortunately, it hasn't been finalized yet. We are hoping that it will be on streaming services in the next month or two, available for sale in the U.S. and the world.
Okay.
Through that, Amazon, of course, iTunes, and everybody else, and Google. Google, I guess, is a bigger player than I realized.
Oh,
and that
I was unaware of that either.
Yes.
It's still kind of frustrating though for you guys to not, you know, have a deal in place yet.
Yes, it's still very frustrating. So at that point, but we do have a sales agent. International sales agent has the rights to sell it, so distribute it. So
good.
At least that's a big point there.
All right, so they're still working on it. Hopefully soon you can stream it on Google or iTunes or whatever.
Yes.
Whatever you can stream it on.
Yep.
So let's talk a little bit that you are a writer. So when in your life did you say writing is going to be my passion? Like, were you a little kid and you wrote stories and you're like, or was it later on in life?
Later on in life, probably around my mid-30s, which was a few years ago anyway. But actually, I worked on Air Force One, and stories started coming to me around that time period.
Okay.
And I got hooked on, a lot of people don't know, but they shot Air Force One out here at Rickenbacker.
Okay, yeah.
They were out here for a week. I got to meet Wolfgang Peterson.
Nice.
Who did also Das Boot. A lot of people, younger people probably don't recognize that name. But
they can Google it.
Yes.
And then watch the film. Anyways, I digress.
Das Boot is one of the classics for a German U-boat.
Yes.
It's very gritty.
Yes.
Very realistic. He did a great job with that. Of course, he did a great job with Air Force One. So I kind of got hooked on movies when I was on that film. And it was long hours, but it was pretty neat experience.
Mm-hmm.
But stories started coming to me, and I just started writing stories down at that point. I never thought I was going to be a writer, to be honest, though. So.
Okay. All right. Specifically, why screenwriting? Just that love of movies and your experience with Air Force One? Okay.
Yep.
All right.
Really always loved movies. Read books, too, but I really loved movies and TV, but mostly movies.
You state that you predominantly focus on the sci-fi genre, the fantasy genre.
Yeah, I love all those, of course. Thrillers, action. My writing typically is action-based, so it's not, and I don't do dramas.
Okay.
And I typically don't do comedies either.
So you just are a fan of those genres, and that's why you like to stick to them?
Yep.
Okay. Yeah. All right. So you went to Screenwriting U. Can you maybe tell the listeners at home what Screenwriting U is? Because it's not an actual physical university.
That's correct. It's an online program. It's very intensive. I have a couple of engineering degrees. I have a master's. I thought those were hard. I thought engineering was hard until I took that program. That's harder. People don't realize how tough that is. It's only on the original professional series certificate. It's only like a 6-month program, but you have assignments every day. You have to come up with original scenes.
Wow.
Every day.
Every day.
Yes. It's very intense. A lot of people go into it thinking it's going to be easy. It's not. It's a very difficult program to get through. And I also did a master's program a couple years ago, 2 years ago, I think. And it was ended up being a 2-year program that I went through with them. And that was, we had to write an original script, but we also had to learn marketing, too.
Okay.
So we had to learn a lot more than just the writing part. The professional series, which I definitely recommend if you're serious about writing, but you got to be serious about it.
It's not the type of thing for like a weekend warrior, so to speak, or something. It's got to be, you got to be in the trenches, ready to go. Okay.
Because I found a lot of people that think they want to do it.
Yeah.
And then, okay, you need to read a couple scripts, you know, and they won't even take time to do that, so you're not going to be a writer. If you're not even up at the time, man. Because you do have to read a lot of scripts. Just watching movies doesn't give you everything.
Mm-hmm.
You have to read a lot of scripts. You know, you probably need to read at least 50 to 100 scripts to get an idea of It took me about 5 to 10 shorts and about 3 features before I really found my own voice in writing. It takes a lot of repetitive writing.
Yeah, and you know, I think you said something to me when we talked a month or so ago that you only write a particular draft like 3 or 4 times and that's it. That's your particular process, right? Mm-hmm. Anything over 4 and it's not worth even paying any attention to, correct?
Yeah, I think to me, if like the first 3 scripts I rewrote a few times and then they weren't working, so to be honest, I moved on. I mean, because it's a learning experience. Your first couple scripts usually are not good anyway, unless you have somebody that's co-writing with you that has a lot more experience, okay. And they can bring on that an experience typically. And I do have a couple where I get hired to do that kind of work, mm-hmm. Where I come along and I co-write with people to help them. They're usually producers or directors that need that help with somebody that's more experienced, or even actors. I even work with actors that want their own feature to mm-hmm. launch. They're usually done a lot of small bits, but they want something to launch their own career.
Okay, something meatier or something bigger.
So a lot of times I'll get scripts like that where I work with them on that. Or lately I've been adapting a lot of novels.
Really?
Yes.
How's the process for adapting a novel? Like when you, I don't know, I'm just going to randomly pick like Lord of the Rings. You know, mm-hmm. that's a huge, huge piece of literature. I often wonder, how do they whittle down and keep in? I mean, I know you got to keep probably 4 or 5 main things, but mm-hmm. then you have, you know, a few things in the periphery. Like, how mm-hmm. do you decide what you pick, you know?
The way I work is, usually, it's a producer bought the rights to the book. I read the book, and usually I outline it the way that I think is the best way for it to be seen as a movie. I look at it from a movie perspective. Some books are very difficult to adapt because they're not set up. They're not written in the style that you need them to be written in to make an easy adaptation.
Okay.
So I always outline it heavily to show the producer or whoever is paying me to adapt it, show them exactly how I want it to flow based on what I can do with the book. Some books, I've had some that are just totally written where you can't really adapt them directly at all. I look at the themes.
Okay. Okay. Go from there.
Yeah, and the story, and that's all I can do.
Okay.
The best I can do with it. Sometimes I get some books are very difficult because when you get done with it, it doesn't even really look that similar to the book.
And that's a red flag that the book is really difficult to adapt.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Look at Cloud Atlas.
I've never seen the movie, but I've heard very bad things about the movie.
I watched the movie and tried to watch it anyway. It's if they cut it down and made a 1 or 2 storylines, they could have probably done pretty good with it, but they were trying to
do everything and cram everything in there.
They tried to cram everything.
There's not much
in. And the problem is you only have, you know, typical spec script is 120 pages, which is 1 page a minute, typically. I mean, that's, and you know, a lot of these books you get, you know, they're 300, 400, 500 pages.
Right.
And you just got to cut stuff out. There's nothing you can do about it. You can't, because when you think about it, you only have so much time to develop characters, too. And you've got a lot of times, like, you have to cut characters or combine characters. Yeah. I do that all the time.
Right.
You just don't have enough time.
Right. That's something to think about when people argue and complain about movies not having everything in it. You know, you can't. Otherwise, the movie's going to be just awful and whatnot.
Yeah.
So, okay, let's talk a little bit about Ghost Entertainment. So, why did you create Ghost Entertainment? And can you explain to the listeners at home, like, what's the overall mission statement for Ghost Entertainment?
Well, Ghost Entertainment came about a couple years, 2 years ago, I think.
Mm-hmm.
I was an executive of manufacturing, got laid off, and then I decided to start doing this full time.
Okay.
And I developed, went ahead and formed Ghost Entertainment out of that. And really, we do mainly features. My goal is to do features and TV, of course. I do work on some TV projects. Typically, I'm a staff writer for a TV project that's in development out of New York City. But TV, I look at features. And then I do my son's, music. I also did that, manage that also.
Oh, okay.
And some of his songs are in Army of the Dark Iris.
Okay, cool. little family tie.
Yeah, there's some family.
I know your daughter helped out on Dark Iris. I think you told me that too. So it really is a family affair.
Yeah. Ghost, and the name Ghost is from my. We had a black lab that we had for a long time. Died recently. It's named after her.
Okay.
Gotcha. That's where the name came from.
I gotcha. Do you have any upcoming projects? You talked about you have a television project that you're working on.
Yeah.
Are you at liberty to discuss any of those?
I can't really talk about that one. They're in negotiations, but I can't really talk about it.
Okay, all right.
Some other projects, of course, I'm doing the book an adaptation right now, where it's just strictly, right now it's a screenwriting project. Hopefully, I'll come on board afterwards. We are, as a producer with it, because it's a great project. It's based on a real story, in the vein of American Gangster. So this is a really neat project.
Okay.
I'm really excited about it. I do have some other projects that work. Most of them I really can't talk about, though, unfortunately.
I understand the legalities of things.
Yeah,
I gotcha. So I'm going to go back real quick, because you mentioned you used to be heavily involved in engineering. That was your job for a while.
Yep.
Are there any tie-overs between your career as an engineer and your career as a screenwriter?
Yeah.
Are there any similarities? Or?
The thing that's helped me, I guess, is from a sci-fi standpoint, to make sure that the sci-fi is grounded. From that standpoint, so I do look at that. So that does help on that.
So you look at things and go, okay, engineering wise, would that spaceship travel that way?
Yeah.
Is that properly built the way it would?
Yeah.
Okay, all right.
Yeah, I do look at that.
Stuff.
Does
okay.
things make sense from yeah. That standpoint? I was a quality manager for a long time, so I'm more structured about what I do. So that does help me.
Okay.
And I don't have a problem leading meetings, so that's probably helps me from the producer side more than the writer side. Because I'm used to leading projects, so that helps me a lot from the producer side. I'm actually enjoying the producer side a little more than the writing side now. So
okay.
I'll probably continue to do more producing work projects.
One thing that we didn't talk about is you also have acted in a few things. You mentioned Air Force One. You have a credit for that.
I'm bad actor.
I was going to ask. You don't like it?
No, I'm bad. I always like to say I'm bad actor. I'm a very, very bad actor.
So how did you get on the project of Air Force One?
So that was
1997?
Yeah, around
okay.
there.
97,
yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. I was in an Air National Guard unit at Rickenbacker, and they looked for people to work on it. We actually got paid pretty good money, so I'm like, okay, I'll do that. And I did it, and because they wanted real Air Force people
to be
on it.
Okay.
So I'm on screen for like half a second, but... I'm there.
Hey, and you got an IMDb credit for that.
Yeah,
so,
yeah,
hey,
yeah,
man.
So.
Hey, what? So you just were an extra in the background, so to speak. Okay.
Yeah.
Cool, man. Cool. You wrote an ebook.
Actually a teaser called Legends of Earth. This is
it's not a full book?
Yeah, unfortunately, I keep wanting to finish it.
Okay.
It's based on a script that's in development right now, but I just haven't had time to finish the book.
So did the book come first or the actual script?
The script was already there,
and
then I wrote the two chapters.
Okay.
So it's a teaser book, and then called Legend of Earth, and then eventually I'm going to finish the book when I get time.
I gotcha. Are there a lot of similarities to writing a book and writing a screenplay?
There's...
I assume that there's a few similarities?
There's a few, but...
Is it ignorant of people to think, it's the same thing?
Yeah, it's... Usually, I put people down, but usually the worst screenwriters are novelists. I think they just can write a script, and usually that they don't understand the whole concept of you got a visual image on the screen, and so they don't understand that chain dynamics.
Okay.
Because a lot of books are internal. There's a lot of internal thinking.
Right. Sure. Yeah. The picture's in your head.
Yes.
It's not there in front of you.
Yes.
Yeah. Right.
Or you'll hear a lot of times the character will narrate what they're thinking. A lot of times you'll see that from a novelist. But the problem is you can't show that
right
on screen. So the problem is a lot of novelists just think, okay, it's only 100 pages. I can write 100, I'll just convert my book into a script. But they don't understand that. You got to be able to show it's a visual medium.
Right, yeah, yeah.
Feature films are a visual medium.
Right.
Primarily. So you're... as a screenwriter, your number one rule is show, don't tell. Mm-hmm. And unfortunately, a lot of novelists tell instead of show is usually what I see is the issue with most when they try to make that transition. It's actually easier if you're a screenwriter going to novelist, but the only thing is you're going to be a little leaner because you're not going to show as many internal mechanisms as you should. Okay.
Yeah, I was going to mention that. You got to be a little more in-depth and you know, as we said earlier on, you have X amount of pages that you can just go and go and go as opposed to 90 minutes. You got to get this character explained in 90 minutes. Yeah. Yeah, most definitely. Understand. So I also have here, and I don't know, again, if you can discuss this, but you have a TV project from a year or so ago, The Undetected?
Yes.
Is that still in production?
Still working on
still
that.
Still working on that?
We have the trailer done.
Okay.
That's the one that they're in negotiation with somebody to sell. I shouldn't say sell, but to get picked up. As you know, TV series, a lot of people don't realize this. TV series is different than a feature. From that standpoint, as a TV series, you need to get picked up. You're not looking for funding. A lot of people misunderstand that. I continually have to correct people. TV series, your goal is to get picked up, not to look for funding. Features are different. Where feature, you want to get, if you're an indie, you want to get funding.
Right.
But a TV series, you're looking to get picked up by someone.
Okay.
On either one of the networks, big networks like NBC, CBS, or Fox, who own almost all the cable channels anymore.
Right.
A lot of people don't realize
that.
I've dealt with NBC before on a project, but they own a lot of channels.
They do.
And then, of course, Netflix is the big one that everybody's working on right now. It's always Netflix is the big dog, and I think they're going to continue to chip away at the networks.
Sure.
And I think 10 years from now, it's going to be a whole different marketplace.
Well, I've heard the theory, just to take a little sidetrack, I've heard the theory that over the next few years, you're going to see a shift in network television to being more sports and more news, dramas and comedies and everything will be shifted more to our streaming system, or streaming systems, I should say, because of the benefits.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, if you look at Netflix, you're paying, and if you're just streaming, you're paying about $10 a month versus if you had a cable where you're paying $50 a month.
So, And then the creative freedom, I think, for the creators.
Yes.
You know, you don't have to be bound to not saying, you know, the F word or to showing a boob, you know, or whatnot.
Yeah, Netflix. Yeah, Netflix and HBO and Showtime even get away with a lot more than the regular networks. The regular networks also are a lot tighter controls on what they actually control your creative. They control you from a script standpoint. They have to stamp every episode.
They have the standards and practices thing still?
Yes.
Okay.
They do that. Everything you do, where Netflix pretty much is loose about that, where you put the scripts together, episodes together, film them, and there's pretty much hands-off from the Netflix standpoint. But that's why they can develop 20 episodes, you know, 20 series in a year.
Yeah, right.
Because they don't have to have a 100,000, you know, 1,000 people to control that.
Do you think there's any drawbacks to the Netflix model?
None that I've seen.
None so far? Okay.
I mean, there are some downsides from the back end of, which I'd say the production company and those ends, because Netflix is a different model where they buy they buy those episodes outright.
Okay.
So you don't get residuals like you do.
Okay.
Network, they're not allowed. I can't remember when that was put in place, but they're not allowed. Networks are not allowed to buy your episodes.
They have to give you royalties.
Yeah, they lease them basically, or rent them. I don't know how you the correct term the rights to show them. Yeah, they're different. It's a different model. So Netflix, they buy those right outright.
Okay.
When it's Netflix only.
Okay.
Obviously, if it's a TV series that's on TV, they buy the rights to stream it.
Okay.
So it's a little different. But yeah, Netflix is totally a different model.
You just don't
get the residuals or anything on Netflix currently.
Mm-hmm. No, I am curious to see how TV goes in the next 5-10 years or whatnot. One of the things that you produced was the 2014 film The Girl at the End of the World. You want to summarize what that project was about?
I
have some questions about it. So
yeah, that's an interesting project. I wasn't that hands on with that because it was British. It was filmed in the UK.
Oh, really?
And some of it was, and then some in the US.
Okay.
But I wasn't that involved in it, to be honest, as much as I should have been. It's just a small time on a friend of mine produced it, and I just helped what I could.
All right.
Did you
like the tale? Because the tale is, of course, of a couple that is living here on Earth, and there's a catastrophic meteor, and then there's the question of are these people the right people for us or whatnot?
Yeah.
So I thought that was an interesting...
It's an interesting take on things. A lot of people get that movie, though, confused with another one that's similar to that. The Manhattan? Wilmington? I can't remember. There's another one. Unfortunately, there's another movie with a similar title that everybody gets confused with, but I think they're the same premise somewhat.
Mm-hmm.
The other one, of course, was a bigger budget one, though.
Sure.
But ours was shot very low budget, but it works, though. I mean, it's kind of a neat tale.
Yeah, most definitely. All right, I'm going to put you on the spot and talk about a couple of things since we're talking about movies. Some of your favorites. All right.
Okay.
So, what are some of your favorite films of all time?
The original Star Wars, of course.
Okay, of course, yes.
You mean
all three, or just The Last Hope?
I love the first three, I guess.
Okay.
Star Wars, The Empire Strikes Back, and Return of the Jedi. Those were three of my favorites. The Matrix. Just The Matrix, not the
sequels.
Those were
pretty bad.
Yeah, those were bad. The Matrix was groundbreaking, I thought, really. A whole different world. I mean, it opened up a lot of different ideas and concepts, I think, to people.
Yes, most definitely.
I do love The Seven Samurai, which The Magnificent Seven sort of stole that concept.
Mm-hmm.
I love some of those old samurai movies.
So
I love the Seven Samurai. I love the Last Samurai. I really love, which Tom Cruise.
Oh, with Tom Cruise. Yes,
I really enjoyed that one. So those are the kind of movies I really enjoy. Actually, just kind of different movies, I guess. For Saving Private Ryan was another one, a war movie, but I really enjoyed that one.
Mm-hmm. If you could rewrite any movie, could you give me a couple that you would go, I would rewrite it and do it differently?
Yeah.
You've had to watch some movies that you go, oh, God,
I do have to watch, I have to watch bad movies and good movies, typically. There's a couple, After Earth was...
After Earth.
Will Smith and his son.
Oh, yes. I remember that. I never saw it, but...
I ended up watching it after, not in theaters, I waited because I knew it was going to be, I wasn't going to waste my money. After Earth is one that they could have easily fixed. They had Will Smith was totally miscast because he played a totally non-emotional type person, because the creatures attack based on emotions and everything. Fear, I think it was. But they played it all wrong for him. It played against his strengths.
Okay.
But also, the problem was they had a son without... They had to crash land, and his son had... Because Will Smith's character had a broken leg, I believe, and his son had to go. The problem was, he didn't have anybody else with him, so there was no human conflict in there.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Yeah, if you don't have that, then you're
so
going to
they could easily fix it, change Will Smith's character to make it to go with his strengths.
Sure.
And have Will Smith's son character with somebody else that absolutely hate each other. And they have to go get the beacon to save themselves.
Yeah, that would have made... Like I said, I never saw it.
That would have made...
Yeah, but if there's no human conflict, I can't imagine.
Yeah, it was very dry.
I mean, you can fight a beast once, but you can't do that the entire movie, because then what's the point?
It was just horrible. Because one of the things they teach you, is make sure that even if there's a monster that you got to fight, you still need to have human conflict involved. If you look at Aliens, which is a great movie.
Yes,
you had the corporate guy who was wanted to sneak one of those Xenomorphs, back. So he was when you look at it, he was the conflict from the human side.
Right, yeah, most definitely.
He was an antagonist from the human side.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You always have to have a human antagonist, even if you've got a monster to fight. You should always have, because it adds a lot more to the story.
Yeah, I definitely agree. I think a prime example of that for me was the last Godzilla film.
Yeah.
Like, there was no... Yeah. After they killed off Bryan Cranston...
Yeah.
Spoiler alert. Anyways, I'm sure everybody's seen it. Anyways, once they killed him off, then I was bored with the film because you're right. There's just... It's creature versus creature, and that's it, and I don't care because, in the other characters were not very three-dimensional, so I, you know, they were throwaway for me.
Yeah, if you look, if you compare Godzilla to King Kong, the recent King Kong, there's a huge difference.
I've heard that.
Plus, King Kong was on the screen a lot more. Godzilla got short-shafted on that. Like, he got really shorted. If you're gonna call a movie Godzilla, you better show Godzilla a lot more than they did.
Right, like the old ones. That's what you that's what you were watching for. You weren't watching for anything else. Yeah. You know, exactly.
If you're not gonna develop the human side, character side, if you're not gonna put any story there, why waste all that time with the human side if you're not gonna do anything?
Exactly, exactly.
Because the son was kind of a waste. You look at him and you're like, anybody could have done that. I mean, I was like, he's not there really for anything, really. I mean, they tried to fit a shoehorn man, but...
Yeah, but it just doesn't work.
But if you look... When you look at King Kong, you know, and you look at the characters, they fit into the story very strongly, and they were a part of the story all the way. John Goodman was in there, and then...
John C. Reilly.
Yeah, John C. Reilly.
And Samuel Jackson.
Samuel Jackson's character was the one, really, the antagonist that really...
Sure.
Was there that did a great job from that side of it to show what happens when somebody enjoys war and really is
hell bent
on fighting, regardless of whether they're going to die or not.
Right.
That's what he's there for.
Yeah.
And it really shows that different side of humanity that they brought. Where Godzilla, they didn't really do nothing with
this
because it was his son. And I'm like, what's he in here for? I mean, he really didn't do it, add anything to the story.
Well, sorry that if we ruined both King Kong Skull Island or Godzilla for you, but anyways.
But Kong is the one to go watch.
Okay, there you go.
Yeah,
go see Kong. Skip Godzilla.
Yeah,
anyways.
Yeah, definitely.
What advice would you give to any aspiring writers if they came to you and said, hey, David, what's some key pieces of advice that I need to know?
I always tell aspiring writers to start off writing shorts.
Okay.
Because that way you can do 15 page, you know, just keep it simple, do 15 to 20 pages, and do a full story, beginning, middle, and end.
Right, do three acts.
Yeah, do a three act structure. Even though short, you still do a three act structure. Learn how to do that first before you start trying to write anything else, because that way you don't get depressed because you can't write a... Most people, when they start writing a feature, they'll stop about page 60 and never, and they give up because they don't have the tools.
Okay.
So I always tell them write five or ten shorts, no more than 20 pages, and then read a lot of scripts.
Okay.
You got to read a lot of scripts, and the ones I always tell people to read is The Matrix.
Okay.
Training Day. Training Day is another great movie.
Phenomenal.
Yeah.
One of my favorites.
And then, it depends on if you're sci-fi. If you're in sci-fi, I always tell people read Avatar, because even though it's kind of a bloated script, but there's some great stuff from a sci-fi standpoint that help you do descriptions from a sci-fi standpoint. But those are the ones I usually tell people to read, because especially The Matrix is probably one of the best scripts out there. There's some Basic Instinct is an older movie, but it's another great script.
Mm-hmm.
If you read the script, it's a very tight script too. I'm looking at it from a script standpoint.
Sure, sure, yeah, yeah.
From your
knowledgeable eye.
Yeah.
You know that it's tight.
Yeah,
do
not read Quentin Tarantino's scripts. Please do not read his. Or Shane Black's. Because if you read those, you're going to try to emulate those and you're going to fail.
What's different about those two guys? How do they write? Do they just write in a very...
Shane Black writes...
In a very loose manner?
Yeah, he writes very... Shane Black... Quentin Tarantino writes it in his own... They're very stylized, Shane Black too, where he'll write, this is the town that Santa Claus has in a snow globe or whatever.
Okay.
But he'll write it very different than the way you should write a spec script. So he'll write it the way he wants to write it, but it comes off on... A lot of people get put off by that type of writing if you're a new writer.
Okay.
If they read that, they're going to throw it
in. Is there a lot of room for improv? Because I think that's one of the things with Tarantino, right? Is he kind of leaves a little bit of... It's real loose because of...
Yeah.
So-and-so has a better idea, they kind of just go with it on a whim. Is that true? Is that accurate from what I've been told? Or
Tarantino writes it the way he wants to write it. The problem is he typically writes his and He likes to use non-3-act structure, so you got to be kind of
careful. Right, right, yeah.
That's the biggest problem a lot of writers, and I fix a lot of scripts that where people, I've been paid quite a bit to fix scripts where people try to write Quentin Tarantino.
Okay.
And I have to come back and fix it.
Yeah.
Because what happens is a lot of times they'll try to write it and they won't understand the basics. So the main character's not in the movie for 20 or 30 minutes.
Okay.
And it doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, right.
And they get the timelines all screwed up.
Yeah.
Try to write, when you first start out, you want to write a basic structure. Don't do it. And I hate when people start doing flashbacks, because the problem is a lot of people, beginner writers, use flashbacks all the time instead of trying to show that through the story.
Okay.
If you're doing character development, show it through the story, either by dialogue or showing. Typically, you want to show. But a lot of people will use the crutch of flashbacks to short circuit what should be showing through the story.
Gotcha. And you know what? I'll just say that real quick. That was my one gripe with Sully. If you've seen it, this is a flashback. So there's no reason for this. Yeah. Why are we seeing these? And just as a side note there. Yeah. But so obviously your biggest piece of advice, just to recap real quick, just try to write those shorts.
Yeah.
Write as many as you can. Read scripts.
Yeah.
Going to say something about Training Day, by the way, not to interrupt.
Yeah, Training Day is a really great script when you look at it, because the reason I love it, because it's one day.
Right.
It's one day. And you want to write as tight a script as you can. If you can write one movie and this only takes place in one day, that's a great learning experience as a writer. Plus, their dialogue is great. You'll see some great dialogue in there. And you also see some great conflict. You also see a lot of subtext, because Denzel's character sets up Ethan Hawke.
Mm-hmm.
He's already got him set up.
Yeah, from the get-go.
From the get-go.
The minute he walks into that diner.
He's already, before he even...
Yeah, before he even gets to the
Yeah,
diner,
before he even gets hired. He's already been set up.
Right.
So that's a great way to show subtext.
Yeah.
Because Denzel knows he's going to take the fall.
Yep.
Hawk's character is going to take the fall. He's going to have him killed. Probably more likely he's going to be killed then. Set up to kill him.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, this is a great understanding of subtext and how you do handle conflict.
Yeah. And there's multiple conflicts throughout that film.
Yeah.
I mean,
So
it's really, very well done. And oddly enough, I really didn't like it the first time I watched it. It took me a second time to watch it to really, really appreciate it. Because I liken it just probably because of the shock of Denzel as the bad guy, as the heel, as the villain. Yeah. Like, I wasn't feeling it.
Yeah.
Second time around, I'm like, I get it. I get what this film's about.
Yeah. A lot of people have trouble with the ending. That's probably where a lot of people have trouble with it. I don't have a problem with it because I know what they were trying to do with the ending, but a lot of people have trouble with that because they're like, well, really, it's not a closed-loop ending the way they expect it to, even though Denzel's character gets shot by the Russian mafia.
Yeah.
But, spoiler alert there. but if you didn't see Train Day by now, it's too late.
Too late, man. It's like almost 16 years old.
Yeah.
Isn't it? 99, I think it came out.
Yeah, so it's a while back.
It's old, but it's
still
a good one.
To me, it's still a classic. Oh, yeah. I think that's another great one there that you can learn a lot.
Yeah, definitely.
Because if you want to learn about subtext, you watch that.
Yeah.
Because if you look at Denzel's character, it's all subtext all the way through.
Exactly.
And that one that he did, a lot of people haven't watched, The Safe House.
Believe it or not, I own a copy of it. I want it at a Christmas White Elephant. Never watched it yet. It's still
Another great one.
Is it? All right.
That's another one that you should watch. Okay. He did a great job in that one. And I think that had Ryan Reynolds in it.
Yes, Ryan Reynolds.
And he did a great job in that.
Oh, okay.
And you see a lot of character development in that one. And y'all see, so there's a good character arc with Ryan's character.
Okay.
And you're following him mainly through the story. But it shows a real good character arc with him.
Okay, cool. Well, I'll definitely pop that one in the DVD player here soon and check that out. So, as we're getting up here close to the time limit, David, is there anything you want to tell the folks at home? Anything else that we overlooked?
No, I think, if you want to be in this business, you gotta work 7 days week at it.
You're an important man taking phone calls, Sure. That's all right, not a problem.
But if you wanna make it in the film and TV business, you gotta work hard.
Okay.
It's not easy. People seem to think, there's a handful of people that make it just out of the blue, but typically most people that they say overnight success are 10 years in the business before they're overnight.
Right.
You know, it's just a joke. It's not that, that really doesn't happen for the most part. Some people hit it big, but there's, you know, you count on both fingers typically, you know, that those kind of people.
Same as pro athletes.
Yeah.
You know, there's
yeah.
a lot of people that think, oh,
yeah.
I can make it in Major League
yeah.
Baseball. Yeah, well, for everyone, there's hundreds that don't,
yeah.
you know, yeah.
Yeah, because most time I work 7 days a week typically. A lot of people in the business. To be honest, though, if I was in L.A., it'd be a different career for me, Pat.
Sure.
I go out to L.A. occasionally for meetings and everything else, conferences, but I don't like L.A.
And there's no reason why the Midwest can't be a powerhouse
yeah.
in film anyways,
yeah.
and that's a whole other discussion.
Yeah, Ohio's
Derek
definitely,
and,
with
yeah.
the tax film credit, Ohio's becoming bigger and bigger with that.
Yeah.
The thing is, really, is to do what you can. A lot of times when you first start out, you got to do free stuff, though. That's all there is to it.
Yeah.
You got to do stuff on spec. A lot of times you got to do some free work. I mean, that's just the way it is in this business. It's a little different than most businesses.
Right.
But you have to work hard at it.
Yeah.
And their place that's hopping right now is Atlanta and Georgia.
Yes.
A lot of film production down in Georgia if you don't want to go to L.A. If you want to do film school, definitely film school does help. I will say that, even though I didn't go to a traditional film school. But film school does help you in that mm-hmm. regard. But I do know a lot of writers that are, like a buddy of mine on a TV series, he was a marine biologist. So I know a lot of writers that are not. Did not
they weren't classically trained, shall
yeah,
we say.
Yeah,
yeah,
yeah. I know a lot of writers that
yeah.
way. Most writers actually aren't like that. And I will say for the younger people, typically, they are the ones that write for TV, not features. Features are usually typically you'll see older people,
mm-hmm.
older writers typically, because they just have the more life experience. But if you look at TV, a lot of TV series, usually it's younger writers.
You know what? I never thought about that.
Yeah.
I never even paid attention to that.
There's a big
that.
Difference,
yeah.
typically, in that regard.
Yeah.
Usually features, though, is just people with more life experience typically do better with that.
Gotcha. Well, is there some social media stuff you want to plug or anything? Or folks
obviously, I'm on Facebook.
Okay.
David Gwynn, and then I'm on Twitter.
Where are you at on Twitter? Is it at David Gwynn 10?
Yeah.
Okay, there you go.
And then, of course, I'm on LinkedIn.
All right.
A lot of people anymore, LinkedIn is has become bigger and bigger. LinkedIn is not everybody knows about LinkedIn, but it's a professional website.
Kind of like Facebook for professionals,
yes.
if you will.
Yes. Yeah. And it's a good place to show off what you're doing in the business. So a lot of professionals are LinkedIn versus Facebook.
Yeah.
Because they don't want to mix their business with their
personal
stuff.
Life. Yeah,
yeah,
yeah.
So
right,
you see a lot
yeah.
of that. Twitter is also pretty big now. You can connect with some pretty big people
mm-hmm.
on Twitter. But you got to be probably more active than I am with it. But.
Yeah. And Ghost Entertainment also. You have a Facebook page for that
yes.
too, right?
Yeah, so Ghost Entertainment.
There you go.
Facebook page. Please like that one. You can leave comments on there. I usually post, and I try to post stuff on there all the time.
Yeah.
On the Ghost one.
Mm-hmm.
And we got the trailer on there. I got some songs that was in the movie there. Try to plug everything I can on there.
Gotcha. And that's a great place to find out about updates for Dark Iris.
Yes.
Since
we're
waiting.
Well, yeah.
A lot of my listeners
yeah,
are waiting
when
to catch
when we find out about distribution, it will be on there. Don't
gotcha.
Worry.
All right. All right. Well, David, thanks for stopping by, man, and chatting with me.
Thank you, John.
You know, I'm going to throw it to a quick break, and on the other side of the break, I'll be back to wrap up this episode. Well, there you go, ladies and gentlemen. My conversation with Mr. David Gwynn, talking about the writing process, and hopefully you took something away from that, especially for those folks that are sitting at home going, I'm a writer, or I want to be a writer. There's some great advice from David. He's been doing it a while. He's been pretty successful with it. And you get the opportunity, follow him on Twitter, at DavidGwynn10, or check him out on Facebook, either at his David Gwynn page or Ghost Entertainment. Either one of those pages will be a great place to get in touch with him. And you know what? As things happen here with Dark Iris, as you know, we mentioned at the beginning of our conversation, not too much is new in regards to the distribution of that wonderful film. But if I hear anything, I'll let you know. You'll be the first to hear about it here on the PVD cast. So with that being said, let's talk a little bit about a few minor things, or major things, depending on your viewpoint.
Those things being, of course, where you can get this great podcast and how you can contact me. Let's go with where you can contact me. Obviously, you can shoot me an email, johnorlando@pvdcast.com. You can find me on Twitter at PVDMVP. And don't forget about the Facebook page, facebook.com/PVDcast. Please like the page. It's getting a lot of traffic now. I think I found a good avenue to use it. For sometimes I'm a little wordy, if you will. I don't want to just, hold myself to 140 characters. So I jump on Facebook and post a lot of blog entries, I guess you could call them, over there. So definitely check out the Facebook page. And you can get this podcast a variety of different ways, just in case you don't know this. You can get it, obviously, at the online home of yours truly, pvdcast.com. It's also available through iTunes, Stitcher Radio, Google Play, SoundCloud, Pod Paradise, and of course, the Echo Network. So pick whichever way you want to listen to this great podcast. And again, let me know, either through Twitter or Facebook, or email me and let me know what you think about it. All right, with that, ladies and gentlemen, I'm going to switch it up a little bit. I will chat in each and every one of you later. And until then, stay righteous, stay independent.